purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. There are three divisions of devotees. First class, second class, and third class. You are very intelligent. Even the third class devotees are liberated souls. It is explained in this verse that although they do not have knowledge, simply by seeing the beautiful decoration of the deity in the temple, the devotee is absorbed in thought of him and loses all other consciousness. Simply by fixing oneself in Krishna consciousness, engaging the senses in the service of the Lord, one is imperceptibly liberated. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Simply by discharging uncontaminated devotional service as prescribed in the scriptures, one becomes equal to Brahman. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said, Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. This means that the living entity in his original state is Brahman, because he is part and parcel of the Supreme Brahman. But simply because of his forgetfulness of his real nature, as an eternal servitor of the Lord, he is overwhelmed and captured by Maya. His forgetfulness of his real constitutional position is Maya. Otherwise, he is eternally Brahman. When one is trained to become conscious of his position, he understands that he is the servitor of the Lord. Brahman refers to a state of self-realization. Even the third-class devotee, who is not advanced in knowledge of the Absolute Truth, but simply offers obeisances with great devotion, thinks of the Lord, sees the Lord in the temple, and brings forth flowers and fruits to offer to the deity, becomes imperceptibly liberated. Shadayanvitaha. With great devotion, the devotees offer worshipful respects and paraphernalia to the deity. The deities of Radha and Krishna, Lakshmi and Narayan, and Ram and Sita are very attractive to devotees. So much so that when they see the statue decorated in the temple of the Lord, they become fully absorbed in thought of the Lord. That is the state of liberation. In other words, it is confirmed herewith that even a third-class devotee is in the transcendental position above those who are trying for liberation by speculation or by other methods. Even great impersonalists like Shukadeva Goswami and the four Kumaras were attracted by the beauty of the deities in the temple, by the decorations, and by the aroma of tulsi offered to the Lord, and they became devotees. even though they were in the liberated state, instead of remaining impersonalists, they were attracted by the beauty of the Lord and became devotees. Here the word vilasa is very important. Vilasa refers to the activities or pastimes of the Lord. It is a prescribed duty in temple worship that not only should one visit the temple to see the deity nicely decorated, but at the same time he should hear the recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, or some similar literature, which is regularly recited in the temple. It is the system in Vrindavan that in every temple there is recitation of the Shastras. Even third-class devotees who have no literary knowledge or no time to read Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita get the opportunity to hear about the pastimes of the Lord. In this way, their minds may remain always absorbed in the thought of the Lord, His form, His activities, and His transcendental nature. This state of Krishna consciousness is a liberated stage. Lord Chaitanya therefore recommended 5 important processes in the discharge of devotional service. 1, to chant the holy names of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. To associate with devotees and serve them as far as possible. 3, to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. 4, to see the decorated temple and the deity. And, if possible, 5, to live in a place like Vrindavan or Mathura. These 5 items alone can help a devotee achieve the highest perfectional stage. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita and here in Srimad Bhagavatam. That third-class devotees can also imperceptibly achieve liberation is accepted in all Vedic literatures. Translation again. Upon seeing the charming forms of the Lord, smiling and attractive, and hearing his very pleasing words, the pure devotee almost loses all other consciousness. His senses are freed from all other engagements, and he becomes absorbed in devotional service. Thus, in spite of his unwillingness, he attains liberation without separate endeavor. I chose this verse because it describes the importance of deity worship and of temples in general. And if we read the history of Srila Prabhupada's life and activities, we find that he worked very hard to establish temples. And Today in particular, we think of the temple in Juhu, Bombay, which involved a tremendous effort by Srila Prabhupada to overcome many obstacles. The land in Juhu belonged to a gentleman. Don't take the word gentleman literally. It belonged to a man named Mr. Nair. Mr. Nair had an office on, I believe, Dalal Street in downtown Bombay. And during the first Bombay Pandal, when devotees were meeting various businessmen to get advertisements for the souvenir to finance the Pandal program, some of the devotees met him. And eventually, Mr. Nair sent a letter to Srila Prabhupada informing him that he had a large property in Juhu, which would be very suitable for use by some good cause. And eventually, Srila Prabhupada saw the land and entered into an agreement to buy it. It turned out that Mr. Nair was a very cunning person. He had entered an agreement to sell the land to someone else before us, and he had taken money from that party, but on some pretext, he did not transfer the land to the other party. And he tried to do the same thing with Srila Prabhupada. Mr. Nair owned the Free Press Journal, which was one of three English daily newspapers in Bombay. He had been the sheriff of Bombay, and he was a moneyed and influential person. And he used his influence in the government offices. He would enter an agreement, and every agreement has conditions. And then he would use his influence in the government offices to make sure that the purchaser would not be able to fulfill the conditions. So he did that with the first party. There was a condition that the land should be subdivided, but then the person couldn't get the permission to subdivide it. With us, the condition was that because we were a charitable society, we had to get the permission of the charity commissioner. And then he made sure that the charity commissioner didn't give us permission. And so he took the money. And on the grounds that we didn't get the permission from the charity commissioner, he never transferred the land. But Srila Prabhupada somehow had some sense that there could be difficulty with the transaction. So he made a condition that even before the land was transferred, he could bring the deities of Radharasa Bihari onto the land. And as it is said, possession is 9/10 of the law. So Srila Prabhupada's possession was very strong in a way, spiritually, by having Radharasa Bihari there. So Mr. Nair, being very intelligent in a crooked sort of way, he understood that the key to his success and his efforts would be to dispossess us of the land. In other words, to drive us off the property. So he hired a man named Ramu, who was a coconut walla. The Juhu land had, it still has, but then it had many, many palm trees, coconut trees. And so Ramu, the people in India, in the old culture, were extraordinarily talented. You know, he would like, I don't know, they would like hold on to the trunk of the tree and put their, they just wear like a little white cloth and barefoot, and they just like climb up, and then he'd have his machete, like whack the coconuts, and I'm sure anyone who's been to, seen how they sell the fresh coconut water, they just whittle away the top and then put a cut across it, and there's a perfectly formed hole, and they're very dexterous. But what Mr. Nair did is he used Ramu to like brandish his machete and terrorize both the devotees on the land and people coming to the temple. It's like a really scary character. And he would do other things, like turn off the water, turn off the electricity. He was really trying to make it impossible for the devotees to stay, so that they would go. But the devotees, I mean, some individuals did go, but as a group, the devotees stayed. And so it was a very major war, a very major war. Tamal Krishna Goswami used to compare it to Kamsa and Krishna. Anyway, things sort of reached a head in a way. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai, Shri Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai, Shri Shri Gaurita Ki Jai. Mr. Nair, I mean, there were many, many ups and downs. Well, yeah, I'll tell. There's so many. All right, I'll add something just to give a more full course. So Mr. Nair, somehow he bluffed the devotees and, you know, convinced them to cancel the agreement, which really made our position weak. And Srila Prabhupada was in Ahmedabad at the time, and somehow he had a feeling that his managers might do something like cancel the agreement. And in those days, we didn't have telephones, and if we did, they didn't work very well. So he couldn't get through to us. And so he sent a messenger, Vishakha Dasi, from Ahmedabad to Bombay to tell us, you know, not to cancel the agreement. But by the time she arrived, the agreement was already canceled. We had already canceled the agreement. So somehow because I wasn't part of that decision, I'm not sure exactly why, but I phoned Prabhupada, which was very unusual to speak to Srila Prabhupada on the phone. He said, Bhaktivedanta Swami here. So I said, I told him that they had canceled the agreement. He said, then everything is finished. Then he asked me a question to which I didn't know the answer. And then he said, you are also useless. And then, but then, you know, his compassionate side came out. He said, don't be anxious. He didn't want me to be in too much anxiety. So then, you know, Nair thought, okay, they're trespassers, there's no agreement, you know, they have to vacate. But still, we weren't leaving. And so then, when Srila Prabhupada happened to go to Hyderabad, it also happened that Mr. Nair, with a sort of guru, was also in Hyderabad. And Prabhupada told Shamsundar, I believe, you know, somehow or other, you have to bring Mr. Nair to see me. So he brought Mr. Nair and the guru. And Mr. Nair is very much like the big demons we read about in the Bhagavatam. They thought that Vishnu was an ordinary human being, but he had mystic powers. That was the basic idea of the demons. Like Hiranyakasipu, he thought if he got greater mystic powers, he could defeat Vishnu. So Mr. Nair, he thought that Prabhupada had mystic powers. So he was afraid that Prabhupada would use his mystic powers to get Mr. Nair to enter into a new agreement that would be unfavorable to Mr. Nair. So Mr. Nair thought that if he had his guru with him, that guru could counteract our guru. So, you know, they were talking and then then Nair's guru said, you know, Swamiji looks tired. We should let Swamiji take rest. And Prabhupada yawned. She said, yes, actually, I'm very tired. So they took leave. Then Prabhupada told Tamal Krishna Goswami that you go in the next room and you will find Nair and the guru are asleep. And he said it's the psychology that if you feel tired, you say the other person, you must be tired, so we'll let you take rest. But actually, he wanted to take rest. So he said, if you go in the next room, you'll find Nair and the guru are asleep. So you have to very carefully wake up Nair and let the guru sleep. and bring Nair to see me. So, you know, Tamalkrishna Goswami went in like very careful not to wake up anyone. And then like he shook Nair and said, come quickly, Prabhupada wants to see you. And he was still groggy and he wasn't. So he came in and then Prabhupada got him to enter a new agreement. But even then there were complications. You know, there was a new deadline, December 31st, and again, you know, conditions, complications, and in the end, it couldn't be completed by December 31st. So, up until then, things had at least superficially been cordial between Srila Prabhupada and Mr. Nair. But now things were wearing on Nair's patience. And so he came to meet Srila Prabhupada at Kartikeya Mahadevya's house. Because Prabhupada didn't have a proper place to stay at Juhu, so. And they started talking, and the emotions started to run high. Then Prabhupada told the disciples to leave, and they started shouting, and Mr. Nair said. Yeah, Prabhupada was basically, from the beginning, he was saying, either give us our money back or give us the land. You can't have both. If you give us the money back, we'll leave. But I don't think you can give us the money back. I don't think you have the money. Or we'll give you the balance and you give us the land. So Nair got very agitated and he said, I mean, I shudder to even repeat it, but he basically said, you know, I will break your Krishna. And then that was it. That was it. And Prabhupada said, okay, you get out. I don't want to see your face. And then a little time passed, and Prabhupada left Bombay, and I was walking on the sidewalk near, the area is called Metro Cinema. And I saw, and you know, and they have, probably they still do, but they used to have like vendors, they would like lay out their magazines and newspapers on the sidewalk. So I saw these, like some stacks of newspapers, and I saw the Free Press Journal, this huge banner headline, and big, bold black letters. A.B. Nair is dead, with a big picture of Mr. Nair. So when I saw that, I was very happy. And I actually felt like dancing for joy on the street. But I was thinking, you know, we're supposed to be saintly, trying to be saintly persons. Is this proper, you know, for a saintly person? So, you know, I went back to our apartment, and I informed the devotees. And one of the devotees, a more senior, he was just visiting Bali Mardan, I believe, but he phoned Srila Prabhupada in Australia. And I believe Shruti Kirti Prabhu answered the phone. And Bali Mardan told Shruti Kirti what had happened, and he informed Srila Prabhupada. Later I heard that when Shruti Kirti Prabhu gave the news to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada folded his hands and closed his eyes and said, "Thank you, Krishna. Thank you." And then he said that Mr. Nair had caused so much pain to the devotees that Lord Nrisimhadev killed him. But we didn't know that. All we knew is Bali Mardan phoned and gave the message to Shruti Kirti Prabhu, and he said he would inform Srila Prabhupada. So I was still, I still was unsure about my reaction, whether it was proper or not. And rumor had it, Rumor had it that in Juhu, because we had an apartment in downtown Bombay that one of our life members was loaning us because we couldn't do any development at Juhu. But there was a small group in Juhu who were also taking care of the deities. And, you know, rumors has it that they were distributing sweets. But even that I only heard later. So Prabhupada had there was one couple, very nice couple, Dr. and Mrs. Singhal. And so Prabhupada wrote them a letter that it is understood that the rascal Nair is dead. This is very good news. And then he wrote that Prahlad Maharaj says that even saintly persons take pleasure when a snake or a scorpion is killed. And then he said, so it is an occasion of great jubilation. So then I felt, okay, my initial response was bona fide. So, but that wasn't the end of the story. That was just the end of Mr. Nair. But, you know, Mrs. Nair was sort of an innocent person. But it's sort of like she could easily be led in the right direction, but she could also easily be led in the wrong direction. So after Nair died, all of her husband's greedy friends, you know, gathered around her. You know, you have to fight this, and like, you know, they killed your husband, and you know. So, in a way, it got worse. And then one morning, a municipal demolition squad came with a big police accompaniment, and they wanted to break down the temple. They had their hammers and pickaxes and chisels, and it was really shocking. Now, I had been to the, it's true, we had a temporary permit, but I'd been to the commissioner, that commissioner for the whole city of Bombay, and he had agreed to extend it. And I even had a letter from him. So when the people came, I went up to the head guy and I said, "Stop, stop." He said, "No, you have no permission. We're breaking the temple." He said, "No, we have permission." So when I got the file, showed him all the papers, he wasn't interested. And I tried to approach different people. They were not interested. So then, I rushed forward, to try to stop them physically. And then the police, they grabbed us all and just put us in the paddy wagon. Finally, the only person left was Maitali, or Matihili. She was Pujari, lady, big. And she positioned herself in front of the door to the deities, defying them all, challenging them all. You get past me. But, then these ladies, I guess they got some lady constables, because, India, they do have, and they grabbed her by the hair, and they dragged her away. And, devotees have said that for that courageous act, she'll go back to Godhead. Maybe even Prabhupada said, And her response is, I'm going to go back to Godhead just like that, kicking and screaming. But I guess that's this unwillingly attains liberation. So there was one devotee who didn't rush forward. He was actually a Gujarati devotee. We were mainly Americans. But he didn't come rushing forward like us. He was crouching in the bushes, seeing what was happening. And then he put a call through to the head of the Shiv Sena political party named Bal Thackeray. And Bal Thackeray, he became furious, they can't do this. How can they do this? So he, as we heard later, he phoned the municipal commissioner. And the municipal commissioner said, they didn't have permission, which wasn't true. And don't forget who owns this city. That's what Bal Thackeray told the municipal commission. Okay. So then the commissioner phoned the ward officer, and then the ward officer came running personally to stop the demolition. And so intriguing, the whole story. Anyway, so they had broken all the brick walls, and they had broken the asbestos sheet roof over the Darshan Mandap, and there were some steel pipes that were supporting the roof. And they couldn't cut through them. So they went and got blow torches. And there's this whole group of people that were against us. And one man, he lived across the street, a big, big house. And he was a, he dealt in black magic, and he was sort of like a demigod there. And all the ignorant people came to him. So he was laughing. He was laughing. And then one lady, she was also sort of mystical. Gandiva was a Prabhupada's disciple, Gandiva, her mother. She cursed him that you're laughing, seeing Krishna's temple burn one day you will burn. So, and then Matre, he was the municipal corporator. He was across the street, and just a little across the, on the kitty corner. He was laughing. So, meanwhile, we were in the police station under, sort of in custody. Then they released us, and we came rushing back to the temple. And we saw they had just, before the demolition had stopped, they had just started to remove like a few pieces of the roof above the deities. And there was a picture of Lord Dasringadev that we had affixed like in front of the deities above them. That was there. It was a little skewed, but that picture of Lord Dasringadev was there. And anyway, it seemed like the darkest moment, but it actually turned out for the better because it really mobilized us. And that's a long story, but eventually the public opinion turned in our favor. And the municipal corporation, the standing committee, they unanimously voted that condemning the action and saying that the temple should be rebuilt at the municipality's cost. It was a major victory. So, one morning, a little after that, because we still didn't rebuild the temple, but it was like sort of raining. But still, we went to Mangalarti, and then we heard these shrieks from across the street, and then we saw an ambulance come, and it turned out that demon who lived across the street had poured kerosene on his body and set fire to it and committed suicide. I mean, what happened to all the demons who opposed Srila Prabhupada, that's a story in itself. But the one person who seemed to escape was the local municipal councillor. And I asked him, how Krishna Goswami, like, you know, there was another one who also died. Like, so I said, like, that all these demons who opposed Prabhupada and the deities, they're all being killed. But what about Matre? Like, he was such a big leader in the whole group. And Tamal Krishna Goswami quoted the verse from the Bhagavad Gita that for one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. Worse than death. And then again, sometime in the future from then, there was like a marcha, it means like a march, protest march, something, on the Juhu Road in front of the temple. And it turned out to be like a demonstration against Matre. It ended up like that. He died a very... He was disgraced, as he deserved. He deserved. He was disgraced. So, we were trying to get permission to rebuild the temple. And we were systematically going one by one to all the municipal councillors, so they would vote, you know, in our favor. But it was one of those things, and one day we sort of had the insight that we don't really need permission to rebuild it because they didn't have permission to break it. And somehow, I don't know, I think Mrs. Nyer must have had her spies, because it was a very small group. I remember it distinctly, very small group in Sadaji Whitlal's office. And we decided, yeah, we'll just rebuild it. We don't need permission. We'll just rebuild it. And somehow she got word of it. So she went to the court. This discussion was Thursday night. Friday, she went to the court to get an injunction preventing us from rebuilding the temple. And the high court justice said, I will not give you the injunction without hearing the other side. So her lawyer said, well, give a temporary injunction for the weekend, and then on Monday you can hear the other side and then make a final decision. He said, no, I'm not giving even a temporary injunction without hearing the other side. So we knew we had the weekend to rebuild it. And so, a very staunch devotee of Srila Prabhupada, Mr. Sethi, P.L. Sethi. He was in the building line, construction line. And very staunch devotee, Punjabi. And so he brought his people to do the work, and it was raining. That it was somehow a rainy season, and somehow Satsvarupa Maharaj had just passed through Juhu just for a few days, and I really liked him. He was my first temple president. I really liked how humble he was. So Tamal Krishna Goswami said, you know, that he wanted me to stay up all night, you know, and make sure the work went on. And I said, I just said some, you know, I really, really admire Satsvarupa Maharaj. He's so humble and gentle. He's so humble. And Tamal Krishna Goswami said, you know, your humility will be shown by your staying up all night and making sure this temple is built. And I thought, actually, it's true. I mean, humility means surrender, and service doesn't mean like a demeanor. I thought, actually, it's what he said is true. So... So that was Saturday. And then Mrs. Nyer's lawyer came with papers, notices, and, you know, what you're doing is illegal, you know, and all sorts of threats. Then Matre came. And he said, even if you rebuild the temple, I'm going to come with 50 gundas. Gundas means like hooligans. I'm going to come with 50 gundas and break it down. And Mr. Sethi said to his son, Bridge Mohan, bring my rifle and revolver. And then he said to Mr. Matre, 50 are not enough. I have 250 cartridges. So you have to bring at least more than 250. So, so Matre never came up back, you know, that was the end. And Seti was serious. He had his gun and his revolver, and he was ready. He wasn't, you know, for Krishna, for Prabhupada, he wasn't going to tolerate any nonsense. So we rebuilt the temple. Then the next morning, went to court, and the judge said, you know, what's done is done. The temple's already built, so there's nothing I can do. And so the temple was rebuilt, but the land was still in dispute. So then it turned out, as a matter of speech, I was going to say, I don't know how Prabhupada knew all these things, but then maybe Krishna in the heart. But anyway, Prabhupada somehow deduced that our lawyers and Mrs. Nair's lawyers were in cahoots with each other, that they actually wanted to prolong the whole case so they could take more and more fees. And he said, ultimately, they will drive their fees so high that the only way Nair will be able to pay them is if she gives them the land. So Prabhupada said, you know, we can't work with these lawyers, you know, her lawyers or our lawyers, these big reputed firms. So we had like a little lawyer. I mean, he was like on retainer for some company. He would like deal with their visas and just like a real small type of lawyer. And somehow and Mrs. Nair had a family friend who was a lawyer. Also not like a big lawyer, like these big firms that were fighting the war. And so he convinced Mrs. Nair to come and see Prabhupada. And at that time, Prabhupada was staying at Bogilal Patel's house on Walkeshwar. And I don't know, she just surrendered. And Prabhupada said, I love you like a daughter. I will take care of you. And then he had his secretaries type up a new agreement right on the spot. And then there was a new agreement, and this one went through. And then finally, there was a big meeting, you know, Prabhupada. It was like a big treaty being signed by these. And so, yeah, Prabhupada signed, and she signed, and the room was hushed, and she started to cry, and then Prabhupada, he was in a very happy mood. He said, we should celebrate. Someone brought a few little firecrackers, so they set off the firecrackers, and Prabhupada said there should be a feast. We didn't have much money, but I mean, there was some sort of feast. And Prabhupada said, we want to start the building fund now. And Mrs. Seti, she took off some of her gold bangles and said, okay, this is to begin the building fund. And at the end, Prabhupada sort of went back and reclined against the bolsters of his asan. And he said, it was a good fight. And then he said, someone should write a book about it. Of course, there is an account in the Lilamrita, but it does require more. It does require a full book. So then, I think I should introduce Dr. Patel. Are there any Patels in the room? Anyway, it's all right. My god brother Brahmatirtha Prabhu, like he addresses groups. He's a very intelligent person, very skillful speaker. So sometimes he addresses these like big groups of Patels. And so sometimes, you know, to sort of break the ice, lighten the atmosphere, he'll say, you know, he'll pretend like he got a note. Mr. Patel, can you please remove your car? It's blocking the way. And it's like 500 Patels. You know, he'll address the, you know, Patel motel owners. And he said once in Bombay, he was driving down the street and he saw like a huge factory, you know, like block after like a huge compound wall and some sprawling campus. And then the sign, Patel Manufacturing Company. And he said, for years he wondered where all these Patels came from. Then when he saw Patel Manufacturing Company, oh, that's where they come from. So anyway, Srila Prabhupada had a friend named Dr. Patel, and they had a very sort of, in a way, an intimate relationship. If you listen to Prabhupada's morning walks and do a lot of discussions with Dr. Patel. So just a little after this, the signing, Prabhupada was, just a few of us in the room, Dr. Patel, me, and another devotee named Mahamsa, and Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada said, you know, we need to raise money for the construction. And Dr. Patel said, Prabhupada, you have to bring the money from America. And Prabhupada said, why should I bring from America? Bombay is such a rich city, if people wanted, they could give the full amount in one day. And Dr. Patel said, yeah, but people don't want. He said, I don't want to discourage you, Prabhupada, but and Prabhupada said, but you are discouraging me. So there was that, and then there was the issue of which way the deities would face, because the way the land was shaped and where the road was, according to Shastra or Vastu or something, the deities would be facing the wrong way. So they were like asking Prabhupada what to do. And Prabhupada didn't take it very seriously. He said, our God is everywhere. Ito nishinga parato nishingho yato yato yamim tato nishinga. But I'm going to tell another story about Dr. Patel that is very relevant to the verse. When the devotees were living in this like Chetai hut on the land, Dr. Patel came and he was impressed that these Americans had come and they were living in this Chetai hut with a tarpaulin roof and sleeping on the floor, and the floor was like crumbling. And so although he was sort of a proud person, because I mean, he was a doctor, he was educated in England, but more than that, he had maintained his purity, his pure habits. Even though he was educated in England, he never ate anything or drank anything, and he knew Sanskrit. He was a little proud, but he humbled himself. And he went to the big cloth market in Bombay, M.J. Mulji Jetha Market, and he begged cotton and cloth. And he had 12 mattresses made, 12 pillows, 12 mosquito nets, and like a chadar, for each. And he presented them to the devotees. And as time passed, well, you know, that 12 pillows, it became 10 pillows, and 12 mattresses became 8 mattresses. And so over a couple of years, his donation disappeared until finally there was not a single shred left. So on a morning walk, he brought up to Srila Prabhupada about his donation, and now there is nothing left of it. And he said, do you know why there's nothing left of it? Because these devotees, they don't care if they have a mattress to sleep on or a pillow to put their head on or a mosquito net to keep away the mosquitoes. As long as they can chant Hare Krishna and serve their Guru Maharaj, they are... that's all that matters to them. And Dr. Patel was sort of an impersonalist. And Prabhupada said that mukti which you are so eager to get, they already have it. And that's why they don't care about these mattresses and pillows and mosquito nets. So this is imperceptibly liberated. Of course, there's another principle, yukta vairagya, but Prabhupada was making another point. He was defending his disciples and trying to, you know, make Dr. Patel a little more humble and appreciative. There was another incident. They were walking. It was a morning walk. And Dr. Patel, he would quote these different popular religious figures of India. And he quoted one, very popular, very respected, And Prabhupada said, he's a rascal. And Dr. Patel said, you can't call him a rascal. And Prabhupada said, I don't say, Krishna says. Namam duskritana mudha prapadyante naradama. Anyone who doesn't surrender to Krishna comes in one of these categories. And that person never surrendered to Krishna, so he's duskritana mudha. And Dr. Patel really got very agitated, and he said, you can't say that about him. And Prabhupada said, I'm not saying, Krishna's saying. I'm just repeating what Krishna says. So that also turned into a major altercation with each one shouting at the other. And Dr. Patel had his cronies, his like circle of friends who, he was the leader, definitely, and they were around. Even they were saying, Swamiji has a heart condition. Don't make him angry. And they were like trying to pull him away. And, you know, we were also in anxiety about Prabhupada. And even while they were like pulling him away, he was shouting and Prabhupada was shouting at him. It was like in a boxing, like the bell rings and the referee separates them. They just keep trying to pound each other. So then afterwards, Tamal Krishna Goswami approached Srila Prabhupada in his room about Dr. Patel. Because Prabhupada would always accuse Dr. Patel of being a Mayavadi. And Dr. Patel would say, no, sir, I'm not a Mayavadi, I'm a Vaishnav. So Tamal Krishna Goswami, he said, what is he? You know, what is his actual position? It's very confusing. And then Prabhupada told the story that there was a man who could speak many languages very expertly. And you couldn't tell what his... Nobody could tell where he came from, what his mother tongue was, because whatever language you would address him in, he would respond in that language perfectly. No one could figure out where he was from. Then finally, one of the people in the town said, I'll find out. Don't worry, leave it to me, I'll find out. So once when the man wasn't looking, that other person came up behind him and gave him a big whack in the back from behind. And he began to curse in his mother tongue. So Prabhupada said Dr. Patel was like that. He could speak many languages expertly. He could speak like a Vaishnav. He could speak like a Gyani, like a Bhakta, like a Karma Yogi, but when we hit him where it hurt, his real language came out. And then Tamal Krishna Goswami said, "Well, why do you tolerate him?" And Srila Prabhupada replied, "It's our duty to engage everyone." Anyway, after that, Prabhupada said, okay, now no more discussion. We'll just read Krishna book. So from then on the morning walk, we read the Krishna book. And Dr. Patel didn't come. Like after years of coming every morning when Srila Prabhupada was in Juhu, he didn't come. But then, one morning, it's like Prabhupada was walking one side and Dr. Patel was the other side. And the way Dr. Patel describes it, he had no intention to go to Prabhupada, but something in his heart just brought him to Srila Prabhupada, to Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet, and like offered respect. And he said, Prabhupada, I've been taught to respect all the accredited saints of India. And Prabhupada replied, yes. And my business is to say who is a saint and who is not a saint. But anyway, they made up. And so then, yeah, so many struggles, but finally on January 14th, 1978, exactly 2 months after Srila Prabhupada left, the Juhu Temple opened. There was a big article in Time magazine. In those days, they were just introducing color. Up until then, it had been all black and white. They'd have maybe like one or two color pages. They had a full page in color with... there was like huge Harinam on Juhu Beach with banners and flags, and that was there, and picture of the temple. And then we had a diorama of Srila Prabhupada under the tree in Tompkins Square Park. So they had the picture of the diorama and with this sort of caption, from rags to riches. And, yeah, there's a lot of coverage. And so many ministers came, chief minister of Maharashtra, one of the central government ministers came. And then, you know, as they say, the rest is history. But this, so the... Prabhupada's relationship with the deities was very personal. This is the point I want to make. That he commented that actually I was not so keen on that land. But because I invited Krishna, I could not bear the thought that he would be driven from that land. It would have been too much of an insult. He said, otherwise I was not so keen on that land. But he made a promise. He said, you know, my dear Krishna, you sit here and I will build a temple for you. And so it was really his personal commitment to Radharasa Bihari that impelled him to persevere against all odds. And Tamal Krishna Goswami commented that we often read about devotees doing austerities for the sake of the Lord, but in this case, the Lord, Radharasa Bihari, did austerities for the sake of the devotee, for the sake of Srila Prabhupada. In other words, they tolerated it's Krishna, so he's always in Vrindavan, but externally he tolerated a very simple shed. And but yes, in the end, Srila Prabhupada was able to fulfill his promise, his commitment to Radharasa Bihari. And now hundreds of thousands of people come for darshan, and you see them. Some of them just really get entranced by the beauty of the deities. Yeah, there. So many are becoming imperceptibly liberated. Here too, there's a great history of both Radha Landanishwar and getting permission for Berry Place, and then Radha Gokulananda, the manor, and Prabhupada personally installing them, so many pastimes, and so much love. You see, Prabhupada's love for the deities and for the devotees. I mean, my first thought when I arrived at Heathrow, because I read Ranchor Prabhu's book, When the Sun Shines, it's such a wonderful book. It totally destroyed my sadhana, because I couldn't put it down at night. I just kept reading, so I'd stay up late, then I'd get up in the morning, pick it up, start reading again. But it was such a wonderful book. And it was wonderful to hear the stories of each devotee, like so many of you now. Like, we were always so busy. Like, some of the devotees here were in Bombay. You know, Sarva Mangala Mataji was in Bombay. But we never talked about our past. We had no time to talk about our past. And then reading the book, oh my gosh, she did that? And Mother Jagannath? Like, she was traveling over. I never knew that. I would never have imagined our pristine Mother Jagannath traveling overland. And so many, and Rancho Prabhu wrote so beautifully, and I remember with Kripa Moya, because like he would describe the devotees, and then how Prabhupada gave them their name, and the way he did it, you could see the connection between like their characters and the name Prabhupada gave them. And so Kripa Moya, you know, it was very dramatic. He said Prabhupada initiated him, Kripa Moya, merciful one. So it really made me see the devotees in a new light, seeing their history and their early service to Prabhupada, and so much love. That was what I thought when I landed at Heathrow, like so much love. Like once they arranged a big press conference for Srila Prabhupada at the airport, and I guess he came early, or I don't know, the flight was earlier, the conference was called for later, and he just left it. He didn't care about the press conference. He just wanted to be with his disciples, and he just left everything and just rushed, and just so much love between Prabhupada and the disciples. And that was really, I feel that was what sustained the movement, and I feel that's what's sustaining the movement now. Just devotees' love for Srila Prabhupada and his love for them. So that's why I feel it's very important to talk about Srila Prabhupada, so we know, so our love for him can increase. My older godbrother, Bharadraj Prabhu, he was actually the first devotee who ever spoke to me. But he later told me that, because he joined in Montreal, but he never met Srila Prabhupada. And when Srila Prabhupada came to Boston, Bharadraja Prabhu came down and met him. And he walked in the room and he saw Srila Prabhupada with his disciples. And he just was overwhelmed by all the love. It's like such a loving family. He's just overwhelmed by all the love. And he had a thought, an insight, that Krishna consciousness is actually love masquerading as a philosophy. And I often think of it, and it's really, in a way, it's true. Because that's ultimately what it is. It's love, love for Krishna, love for the Vaishnavas, and for us in the most immediate sense, love for Prabhupada and his love for us. Hare Krishna. So it's 9:15. That was the limit I was given. There's a lot of very important philosophical points in the purport, but we can't discuss it now.